I'm going to read a passage in the voice of my character, Hetty Handful, an enslaved woman who lived in Charleston, South Carolina in the early 19th century. Already that morning, Mrs. had taken her cane stick to me once across my backside for falling asleep during her devotions. Every day, all us slaves, everyone but Rosetta, who was old and demented, jammed in the dining room before breakfast to fight off sleep, while Mrs. taught us short Bible verses like Jesus wept and prayed out loud about God's favorite subject, obedience. If you nodded off, you got whacked right in the middle of God said this and God said that. I was full of sass to Aunt Sister about the whole miserable business. I'd say, "Let this cup pass from me," spouting one of Mrs.'s verses. I'd say, "Jesus wept because he's trapped in there with Mrs. like us." Aunt Sister was the cook. She'd been with Mrs. since Mrs. was a girl, and next to Tomfrey, the butler, she ran the whole show. She was the only one who could tell Mrs. what to do without getting smacked by the cane. Mama said, "Watch your tongue," but I never did. Aunt Sister popped me backward 3 times a day. I was a handful. That's not how I got my name, though. Handful was my basket name. The master and Mrs., they did all the proper naming, but a mama would look on her baby laid in its basket, and a name would come to her. Something about what her baby looked like, what day of the week it was, what the weather was doing, or just how the world seemed on that day. My mama's basket name was Summer, but her proper name was Charlotte. She had a brother whose basket name was Hard Time. People think I make that up, but it's true as it can be. If you got a basket name, you at least had something from your mama. Master Grimke named me Hetty. But Mama looked on me the day I came into the world, how I was born too soon, and she called me Handful. This next passage is in the voice of Sarah Grimke, the other narrator of this story, and she is given a birthday present on her 11th birthday, a human present, which is an enslaved girl, Hetty Handful. And this scene takes place right after the night of this infamous birthday party. Sliding from my perch, I stole to the window where I shivered in my white woolen gown, gazing along East Bay past the dark rooftops toward the harbor. Plastering my cheek against the frigid pane, I discovered I had a partial view of the slave quarters above the carriage house where I knew Hetty to be spending her last night with her mother. Tomorrow she would take up her duties and sleep outside my door. It was then I had a sudden epiphany. I lit a candle from the dwindling coals in the fire, opened my door, and stepped into the dark, unheated passageway. 3 dark shapes lay on the floor beside the bedroom doors. I'd never really seen the world beyond the nursery at night, and it took a moment to realize the shapes were slaves, sleeping close by in case a Grimke rang his bell. I crept barefooted down the wide mahogany stairs to the first floor, where 2 more slaves slept, along with Cindy, who sat wide awake with her back against the wall outside my parents' chamber. She eyed me warily, but didn't ask what I was doing. I picked my way along the Persian rug that ran the near length of the main passage, turned the knob to Father's library, and stepped inside. An ornately framed portrait of George Washington was lit with a scrim of moonlight coming through the front window. For almost a year, Father had looked the other way as I slipped beneath Mr. Washington's nose to plunder the library. John, Thomas, and Frederick had total reign over his vast trove, books of law, geography, philosophy, theology, history, botany, poetry, and the Greek humanities, while Mary and I were officially forbidden to read a word of it. Mary didn't seem to care for books, but I dreamed of them in my sleep. I loved them in a way I couldn't fully express, even to Thomas. He pointed me to certain volumes and drilled me on Latin declensions. He was the only one who knew my desperation to acquire a true education beyond the one I received at the hands of Madame Ruffin, my tutor and French nemesis. She was a small, hot-tempered woman who wore a widow's cap with strings floating at her cheeks, and when it was cold, a squirrely fur coat and tiny fur-lined shoes. She was known to line girls up on the idle bench for the smallest infraction and scream at them until they fainted. I despised her and her polite education for the female mind, which was composed of needlework, manners, drawing, basic reading, penmanship, piano, Bible, French, and enough arithmetic to add two and two. I thought it possible I might die from tracing teensy flowers on the pages of my art tablet. Once I wrote in the margin, "If I should die of this horrid exercise, I wish these flowers to adorn my coffin." Madame Ruffin was not amused. I was made to stand on the idle bench where she ranted at my insolence and where I forced myself not to faint. Increasingly, during those classes, longings had seized me, foreign, torrential aches that overran my heart. I wanted to know things, to become someone. Oh, to be a son. I adored father because he treated me almost as if I were a son, allowing me to slip in and out of his library. On that night, the coals in the fireplace lay cold and the smell of cigar smoke still pooled in the air. Without effort, I located father's South Carolina Justice of the Peace and Public Laws, which he himself had authored. I'd thumbed through it enough to know somewhere in the pages was a copy of a legal manumission document. Upon finding it, I took paper and quill from father's desk and copied it. I hereby certify that on this day, 26 November, 1803, in the city of Charleston, in the state of South Carolina, I set free from slavery Hetty Grimke and bestow this certificate of manumission upon her, Sarah Moore Grimke. What could father do but make Hetty's freedom as legal and binding as her ownership? I was following a code of law he'd fashioned himself. I left my handiwork atop the backgammon box on his desk.